This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
And we're back, and it's Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sando, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. We've time traveled back to the year 2017.
This Mars space travel stuff is very primitive.
Yeah, so later on today, SpaceX CEO Elon Musk will be giving a major update on his plans to colonize Mars.
I hope it's better than his last major update, which was just about drawing about
Mars.
A space shuttle. Yeah, yeah. I've got a really big announcement for you.
And that's it.
Yeah, exactly. Just silence.
Yeah, so he will be giving a talk in Australia to basically add on to what he said last year at the IAC conference, which is the International Astronautical Congress, where, you know, last year he revealed like the full architecture plans, which is just basically a sheet of paper and like, you know, a whole bunch of drawing plans of how he's going to send 1,000 people to Mars. This time around, though, his speech may revolve around the concept, making it more feasible, I guess. And I think one of the main things he would probably do is try to scale things down. So some hints of to what he will probably do is the size of the vehicle, a smaller vehicle, because currently the spaceship that he wants to send all these people into Mars is it's nicknamed as BFR, which I can't say what it
stands for.
You'll
have to look that one up. Yeah.
So it has stuck since the day of the concept, and until now he's still calling it the BFR, which you have to Google what it stands
for. Yeah, it's a big flaming rocket.
To put it nicely.
Yeah.
So I think one of the ways that, one of the things that he will announce is the scale of this BFR will be toned down.
But that's the thing I don't understand so much, because the whole point was you needed a really big rocket to get people to Mars.
Yeah.
But now he's saying that because of technical issues with a really big rocket, they're going to make a much smaller rocket, which is bigger than current rockets, but is still basically pretty much around the same area as the rockets we have, which is why I'm wondering why this is an announcement, because it's an announcement to say we're not going to make the thing we are going to make, and we're going to make one that's slightly bigger. It's sounding more and more like an iPhone launch.
Now that you say it, it does kind of ring some bells here. But I think it's the space that they have in order to build this rocket. I don't think Elon Musk and NASA, they don't have a space for him to do something like this. So he has to tone it down to make it a reality. And the other thing is also its cost here. No one knows who's going to pay for all these. Elon Musk himself, I'm sure, you know, despite his richness, he will not be able to fund this by himself.
I mean, again, there's an element in the article that I read that kind of reminds me about the kind of Juicero thing. It's this idea of due diligence. Mm. And I think there was something about the BFR having something like 42 separate rockets.
Yeah.
So obviously you then have to have enough fuel to power 42 rockets to take you to Mars. So there was an issue that there wasn't enough space for the fuel.
Yeah.
So building an extra large rocket was self-defeating, because it couldn't take all the people, because it needed all the space for fuel. So, you know, anyone writing on the back of a napkin should have been able to sort that one out quite quickly before the BFR got announced to the public. But
you know, it's Elon Musk anyways, right? Yes. When he says he wants to do something, it's a big announcement. Yeah. So, you know, everyone jumps into it, right?
So now we have the MFR, which is the manageable flaming rocket.
Yeah, so it's trying to scale things down. Yeah. But I came across an article on futurism.com, which I think needs to be answered.
I actually find this article way more interesting than the previous story.
Because the mission to Mars here presents a whole lot of danger that we've not talked about it yet.
Yeah.
Cosmic ray dangers, for example. Yeah. That's something that, hang on a minute, guys, I've not heard Elon Musk or anyone has mentioned about this.
No, and this isn't, I mean, it's kind of like the radiation that we have on Earth, but this attacks you at a cellular level.
Yeah.
So it affects everything. And apparently there's some part that they're, again, they don't really know, because nobody has gone through this to a large degree. Once you expose human cells to this kind of radiation, yes, you can control maybe what happens in one cell, but you don't know what the knock-on effects are in other cells that maybe haven't been subjected but are connected to these cells. So there's a huge amount of danger here from these cosmic rays.
Yeah, yeah. And these cosmic rays are basically just high-energy atomic, subatomic particles that they get blasted from exploding stars, black holes, and there's a whole lot of powerful sources in space that, you know, we've not come across them
because,
yet.
Because our atmosphere filters them all out. Apparently, one of the reasons that the International Space Station is only just outside Earth's orbit, is it still within the magnetic field that filters out a lot of the cosmic radiation.
And
even then they're still exposed to much higher levels than we have. Yeah. We don't know what the long-term effects of those are.
I think everyone's just going to come there and, well, as soon as they land on Mars, it's going to just pop up another head.
But the funniest thing about this article is that it says there's a company working on a suit that you wear at all times to shield you from cosmic radiation.
It apparently absorbs all the atomic radiation.
Now, that is a wonderful idea. But currently, when you look at disasters like Chernobyl and TEPCO in Japan, we can only send people in hazard suits into those places for an hour, and they get a lifetime's dose of radiation in about an hour. You're talking about sending people to live on Mars and wearing a suit.
Yeah.
What? So they can never, ever take that suit off, even inside the buildings and the habitats. I don't get it.
Yeah, I actually now think this whole Mars project is just utter rubbish. I don't think it's ever going to work anytime soon. It's just going to be beyond, you know, any capable, human capable, unless the AI, I think, would be able to come up with something.
Honestly, I think it's a lovely idea, but until we get to this point, and I mean, I think we've discussed in past episodes where we can send machines that are able to replicate themselves and to build these things without people, because we're going to have structures that completely shield people from this radiation if we ever find a way to do it. Because, atmosphere. Mars doesn't have one. We do. That's why things live on Earth and they don't live on Mars. So it's a really, really big task. It's a huge task.
Yeah, it's a huge task. Mark Zuckerberg, he recently came out and apologized for ridiculing the fact that, you know, he always said that, you know, fake news never had any impact on the election.
Yes.
But he's made a U-turn now.
He's made a U-turn. There was this idea that, a lot of people were complaining that fake news articles were being spread via Facebook, and Mark Zuckerberg claimed that, you know, Facebook didn't bear responsibility for this, that people would make their own informed decisions. They wouldn't simply trust something that
he said it would be crazy.
Crazy, to just trust something that you read online, which, you know, as the research for our show today was stuff we found online, I guess we're crazy.
Yeah.
But no, the Facebook is now a big part of the investigation into that is happening, this US investigation into Russian influence over the US election. So Zuckerberg has come out and apologized for this. He also made the nice statement that he's now being attacked by people on Trump's side for the company cooperating with the investigation, which Trump has called in itself a fake news story, and he's being attacked from the liberal side for having facilitated the spread of fake news. But a lot of this revolves around the fact that a lot of dummy accounts were used to purchase Facebook ads that were then spread, you know, very, very widely.
Very dubious,
and they're not monitored by humans. You can buy the ads very simply. It's a kind of, it's a robotized procedure. You pay and the ads go out. And they've seen similar things happening with other elections. So they were monitoring very closely on the German election, but they've seen similar attempts in the UK with these fake profiles and these kind of misleading content ads. So it's nice that Facebook is coming out and saying, you know, we're not going to take part in this, but I would like them to see them go a step further because they make a lot of money for these things. It's like, if you're saying that Facebook is a neutral platform, then just say, okay, we're not accepting money for these. We're going to be revenue neutral when it comes to political ads as well. And I don't mean choosing a side. I mean simply saying, right, political content on Facebook, we are not accepting ads for.
Yeah.
But if people want to use their own profiles for their own views, that's one thing. But we do not accept political advertising.
Mm. Do you think his U-turn is, you know, him trying to probably, you know, get on the seat for, you know, the next elections perhaps? You know, there are talks about, you know,
I know he... The idea has been floated, but honestly, I think the way things have gone over the year, I certainly not for 2020. If he's got ambitions in that area, I would imagine he would have to wait till 2024 or potentially 2028 or possibly even 2022. He can challenge me. He'll probably still be alive then. So, but no, I don't see him having direct political ambitions in the near future because of the way... Facebook has not been able to cope with the situation at the moment.
Now, early on, we just talked about Elon Musk, and obviously he also owns Tesla, and they're, you know, one of the pioneers of electric vehicles. British inventor Sir James Dyson, he's obviously well known for, you know, revolutionizing vacuum cleaners and bladeless fans.
Things that blow air, basically. He's really good at things that blow air or suck air.
Sucking air or blowing air. He wants to do something quite crazy. He wants to basically build an electric car. And in fact, he's been working on the project since 2015 and he's spent nearly £2.5 billion on this project as well. No prototype has been built yet, which kind of makes me wonder, where did the money go? Like, that's a lot of money, £2.5 billion project here.
So I can kind of imagine it, because if you know any of the backstory about James Dyson, he is... an inveterate tinkerer, and for one of the for one of his handheld cleaners, it took something like 10 years to come to market because they had to completely re-engineer the concept of a turbo motor. So he had engineers working on the process of a handheld vacuum cleaner for more than 10 years. So I'm really not surprised. The main concern I have here is that, the same as anyone who comes into the automotive industry without any experience, making cars is an incredibly complicated thing. They, you know, there are thousands of interconnected parts, and they have to be really, really long-lasting. You know, cars now generally have a lifespan of, you know, best part of 500,000 kilometers. And a lot of the parts in the car will be replaced over that time, but a lot of the parts are expected to simply... last, and they do, because car makers have had so much experience. So that puts a lot of the kind of newcomers at a disadvantage. But I still have this vision in my head that they're going to put a giant fan in it, and that the first time they turn it on, somebody is going to be standing behind the car and they're just going to be blown away. I just keep having this vision of it. I know it's an electric car. I know there's no fans in it, but I just have this image of Dyson with a giant fan in it.
Well, the one thing that I do have some confidence is that he actually really admires the Austin Mini. He finds that that is one of the, you know, a design classic. And if he can do an electric car that looks anything like the Austin Mini, then yeah, I'm all in, because that's a beautiful car. And that's one car that I would love to drive around town, especially being electric.
I think the biggest reservation I have with this is not that they won't bring it to market or that the technology won't be fantastic. I think all of those things will be the case, because Dyson, he might take his time, but he does generally seem to deliver. He, you know, he's one of these people who really does follow through on the ideas. But he does say that the price of it is going to be quite high. And that's one of the issues.
His current products are the same thing as well.
Well, they are, but that's why... they're, you know, they lead in their sector, but they haven't revolutionized the industry, because, you know, people haven't been able to adopt them at a lower level. At least when you see something like Tesla, the prices on Tesla cars keep coming down and down, and they keep making them more accessible. So, you know, I think when they started off, it was over $100,000 US dollars. Now you can buy the entry level, the three, for about $45,000-$50,000. That's still a lot, but that really is pushing in the right direction, and it shows you what hopefully they'll be able to do once they achieve scale. Dyson, I think, is not interested in doing that, and if he patents everything, you know, really, really tightly, I think we're going to see a very very narrow adoption of his products.
Only probably for the rich and famous, I guess.
Yeah, exactly, which would be a shame because, again, you know, I have one of those handheld vacuum things because my wife really, really wanted one, so I bought her one as a present. She wants one of the new hair dryers, so that's probably going to be the Christmas present. But they are very, very expensive. Yeah. You know, it's strange to think of a vacuum cleaner or a hairdryer as a luxury product.
Yeah.
You know, you don't normally put them in those categories, but that's where they live.
Yeah. Anyways, we'll take a short break. We'll be right back with more stories. You're listening to Geek Squawks, BFM 89.9.
Because feelings matter. BFM 89.9.
And we're back with Geek Squawks. My name is Jeff Sandu, together with Culture Pop's Matt Armitage. Now, recently there have been this whole stories about, you know, it's the whole pay-to-click, all those, you know, click-to-view ads, and that whole mechanism is not working anymore. Now we're paying with our electricity here.
Yeah, well, everyone's kind of known that this kind of click-to-view ad model hasn't really worked for a while. So a lot of sites have been looking for alternatives. And it's not often that you read a story and your eyes kind of pop out of your head. But that's what happened when I read this. So what it turns out that some sites, the Pirate Bay, which, you know, everyone knows is the illegal downloading site that nobody should go to and we don't promote on this show. But even well-known sites like Showtime, which is the US network, have been running software in the background that mines cryptocurrency. This I found absolutely staggering. So what happens is you go to the site, and while you're doing your thing and you're browsing, in the background, the same kind of software that was used to deliver, you know, cookies and ads or whatever, is actually using your computing power to help these companies to mine these cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin and Ethereum, which I just thought was incredibly rude. Now, some people in the security sphere noticed the uptick on processor power that browsing these sites was causing, and they found this software was there. Now, the Pirate Bay has taken it down. Mm. Interestingly, Showtime has disabled the software, but hasn't mentioned whether it was there officially or unofficially, because there's the possibility as well, this is just conjecture, that it was a member of staff or somebody on a developing team somewhere who actually planted the software and was using it illegally to mine currency for themselves. Because you kind of wonder how that would fit into Showtime's business model. How do you actually account for virtual currency that's created by people browsing on your site? Fortunately, if you are afraid that this is happening to your computer, you can block it with the same kind of software that's used for ad blocking.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of mechanism. But yeah, I just thought this was incredibly rude.
I actually had a pop-up recently. I was not surfing Pirate Bay or Showtime because I can't access Showtime, but I was browsing one of a very popular site, and I actually got a pop-up from my ad block, and it was saying that one of a Bitcoin miner app within my Chrome browser has been blocked. And I was like, ooh, hang on a minute.
Yeah, precisely. You know,
there are more than one company doing this, yeah.
No, for sure. I think this is actually very widespread. But, you know, it was a complete surprise to me that somebody could do this, that somebody could take over your machine while you're running Chrome or Safari or Internet Explorer or, you know, whatever browser, and use your actual system resources to help them to mine currency.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyways, remember a few weeks ago, or probably a few months ago, we talked about the Volocopter, the German drone firm, and, you know, we all kind of still laugh about it. It looks like one of those two-seater helicopter that's like got like 18 propellers on top of it. It looks really weird, really funny. But they've actually gone on and done a test in Dubai, and they've successfully done a stage flight on Monday, and it's apparently going to be the world's first drone taxi service under the UAE city of Dubai. And I'm like, wow, it's going to happen. It's actually happening. You're going to see flying vehicles in our skies.
We know that Singapore is trialing these kind of things. We know that Amazon has a drone test center in Cambridge in the UK, which has been used for services. But yeah, this is a first. I mean, I actually thought it was going to be one of the Chinese services were competing to get this online.
Because we all kind of forgot about Dubai and how crazy they could go.
Yeah, exactly. So this is a really nice service. Yeah. But again, I have reservations about it. But my reservation is not the same as most people's. Most people's is, oh no, it's really freaky to get into some kind of flying
pilotless
craft that doesn't.
Car,
Whereas for me, actually, the pilot is the bit that's dodgy. If it's being run on software, I'm actually happier about that. Mm. My issue is the fact that it's a helicopter and it's electric.
Yeah.
So helicopter, heavy batteries. When battery stops working, helicopter falls out of sky. Heavy batteries, it falls out of sky faster. So I would prefer to have some kind of plane that has gliding possibilities. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Because again, there's no pilot there to do anything. So I'm definitely afraid of the plummet.
This is definitely an Uber copter, because the way that they're going to implement this is from your smartphone. You're going to download an app and then you're going to request for the volocopter, and then it will send a volocopter to you, and then it will deliver you to wherever your destination is. So probably you could, if you're going on a holiday in Dubai next year, you could definitely take one of those as a joyride, I guess.
Hopefully not from here.
No. Hopefully not from here. Now, Apple, Matt, there's got some issues with the iPhone X. You've got some issues with the iPhone X.
Well, no. Again, this is when Apple announced the Face ID software replacing the fingerprint scanner for the new iPhone X. Everyone said, pretty much en masse, are you sure?
Yeah.
Is that really going to work? Because, every other manufacturer who has tried this facial recognition, it hasn't worked. So I'm not sure if it was Samsung or one of the other or LG or someone, but you could fool the beta they had with a photo. So it recognized the points of the face, but not the depth. But Apple said, no, we've perfected the system. Yeah, we've perfected the system. We have the depth measurements. That's why the camera on the front of the iPhone is fancy. Mm-hmm. Not going to be a problem. Turns out, problem. So what happens is, for most people, it's actually fine. It works fine. But if you're a twin, if you have an identical twin or a triplet or whatever, it doesn't have it. It could quite easily become confused because your facial, very similar. Now, I'm also wondering if, there are some brothers, some brothers or sisters or whatever who also look very similar without.
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to work as well? But also, apparently, it doesn't work so well on children under the age of 13.
Oh.
Presumably because their facial features are still very much in development. Yes. So you have that kind of softness about the features. So presumably it can't sense the depth so much. So I do think perhaps we're going to see the fingerprint scanner coming back
on previous
models.
Yeah.
But there was another kind of buried at the bottom of this story was also an announcement that Apple is changing some of the developer rules, because it turns out that developers, although they didn't have access to your actual facial scan, they still had access to some of the data regarding the measurements, which is the pinpoints between the distance from the camera lens and your face. So that would actually give you enough information to recreate a basic map of someone's face. So Apple has now restricted access to that data. So again, Face ID, really?
Yeah, it's not going to work. It's not going to work. Let's move on to Geek Tunes. You've got something by St. Vincent.
Yes, this is a new track by St. Vincent. This is called Los Angeles. I have a kind of love-hate relationship with St. Vincent.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff is really, really awesome. And some of it, I'm just like, again, like Apple, really? But this is a really nice example. This is a really kind of mellow synth pop, poppy summer song. So yeah, this is St. Vincent with Los Angeles.
BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.